So we have about 10 minutes per question, so I invite anyone to come up to the microphone, set up on the floor, and we'll be happy to take your questions. Don't be shy. We can wait. It has been a long day. Yeah.
Hi, I have a quick question. So I'm with the YWCA Canada, and we have counseling programs across the country working with girls and young women. So I wanted to find out what you see the role of the helping sector in all of this. I mean, we're definitely working in collaboration with the educators. Certainly, parents look to organizations that have girls and young women's programs for support. And so just wanted to get some feedback from the panel around where you see the help sector and also in this work and where you see the role of peers. So where do you see a peer support where youth are supporting each other through the process when they're being bullied, when they're experiencing cyber violence at school and in the community?
Thanks. That's a great question. So I think for me, where I see the role of the YMCA and other sectors such as those is to really open up and foster the dialogue around it. As it was mentioned before, youth sometimes don't understand the implications of their actions until they've had the opportunity to really talk about it. I think another avenue that we can really foster is talking to the youth about what is harmful behavior. What do you consider to be a joke? What is the role of empathy in your communication? How do you communicate online? So really opening up that dialogue and trying to tease that out of the youth so that they are becoming responsive and accountable to their actions.
I mean, in terms of after-school programs, et cetera, I think that this is one of those situations where, we don't also, I think, like, absolutely we should be, you know, engaging them in dialogue, but also, you know, forming activities, teaching them how to use, computers in, like, a more responsible way. Just generally, I think it's important to have it at all times during the day, just to not bombard them with ethics this, ethics that, because it's also, you know, we've talked about this distrust that lots of students are also experiencing now. When, you know, we continuously bombard them with this is the rules, etc. But I think it's really important to just constantly create activities, programs that reinforce, that reinforce the dialogue more than talking at them, and then also just the mediums in which we, engage with the ways in which we engage with technology, etc., is also very important. And as for peers, that's absolutely a really good question. Obviously, you learn that there really are peer influencers, people that are more, likely to follow, people who are more likely to be leaders. I think it's really important to really empower kids so they all feel at some point that they can be a leader, and to create, not necessarily to always target the leaders. I think that that's something in business classes that I'm in now, they're always talking about targeting leaders. I think that here you have an opportunity to create activities where different kids can have the opportunity to be the leader, and that empowers them more, and in my opinion, would make them less likely to be a bystander if they saw something. So I think that's really important, is empowering kids and not just targeting leaders and not just talking at them.
And to build on that and be a little bit more specific, in answer to your question regarding peers, there's been a lot of research where it's often thought that peers, that peer mediation or peer counseling sometimes is helpful in these kinds of situations. but there's a lot of research that says it's not necessarily, and in fact, in some cases, it can make it worse, unless it's properly monitored and delivered. So that's important to know. But I think that the role of organizations like yourselves might be to engage young women in really thinking through creative solutions that can involve, you know, they can involve the arts, they can involve, just because we're talking about digital issues, it doesn't mean that we don't use books, we don't use children's literature, or we don't use any kind of literature. You know, we need to get creative, we can use music. When we launched this website, for example, we had a group of young musicians that came in and sang songs that they had written about bullying and cyberbullying. So it's finding ways simply to get the process going in terms of helping them think through, so that when they're actually then ending up posting online, that there may be, you know, they'll have at least an informed knowledge. Get them reading, get them finding out, you know. So, for example, here's one example. A few years ago, when the Prime Minister had written an apology to the Aboriginal, the First Nations peoples, about residential schools, there was a grade five teacher who got her young her students to actually go and research what happened, why was he apologizing, and write a letter as if they were the Prime Minister. So that allowed them to go into, you know, different aspects of research, you know, look at the history, and look at, you know, why he was apologizing and what damage had been done. And we can certainly do this in, you know, with cyberbullying. But certainly in terms of young women and these double messages that we've talked about, that earlier panels talked about, the conflicting messages that they're getting, on the one hand, that they need to be able to assert their own sexuality, you know, as feminists, as independent young women, but it's societal judgments that are that actually, when they actually do it, that can really impact their reputations, their emotional well-being, the commodification of women, all of that. You know, you can get women to get involved in taking leadership on some of these initiatives. Doesn't have to stay in calendar, do some international work. There are so many opportunities, and using, obviously, the digital media. So certainly, you know, I don't think we need to just limit it to the classroom. We don't need to limit it to curriculum or specific anti-bullying programs. I think we need to ultimately revamp our entire education system. We need to revamp teacher education. And I'm saying all this as sort of some concluding remarks to this conference, that in many ways, teachers have not been prepared in teacher education and professional development programs. We need, because all of this has happened so fast, and they're still digital immigrants and still thinking with that digital accent. And unfortunately, professors in education are also thinking with that digital accent. Now, as more and more of the digital immigrants become teachers and teacher educators, that's gonna change. But in the meantime, you've got to work with people to embrace the technology and engage more actively, right? So I think we're going to see changes. They can't happen immediately. They're happening, as we saw with the younger kids that we interviewed for the Facebook study. They were more informed than the teenagers about taking leadership and ownership and contributing to policy. Get young women involved in lobbying and contributing and insisting on being invited to have a voice when laws are being when these bills are being put forward. Because we don't know how many young people, youth, inform this. As Senator Jaffer said this morning, she was that the Senate study did consider, you know, they listened to young people. So it's really important that they're mobilized, get young people more interested in voting. Look at what the mayor of Calgary has been able to achieve with just connecting with the youth, right? So there's, we're stuck with our structures, but we don't need to. Shauna Van Prague actually has written, you know, in terms of how to use the law creatively, or just to learn about the law, to gain legal literacy. She has used, she's written some amazing articles on how the law can be used, or how children's literature, such as Harry Potter and other children's literature, can be used to better understand legal concepts. And how judges think about youth culpability. So there are many, many, many ways of doing this. But we have to, you know, think outside the box. We've got to expand our horizons in terms of how we think about these things. But thank you. I think there's another question, so I'll leave.
Merci beaucoup. Je voudrais poser ma question en français. Est-ce que quelqu'un peut le traduire? Est-ce que ça sera possible? Donc, mon nom est Irène Demchok. Je viens aussi d'un groupe communautaire, l'Association québécoise Plaidoyer Victimes, qui est pour la promotion, en fait, des droits des victimes d'actes criminels, jeunes et adultes. Et également, nous avons, au centre de notre mission, c'est vraiment l'information. Et l'information, notamment sur les systèmes de justice pénale. J'ai trouvé la conférence d'aujourd'hui extrêmement enrichissante et je veux remercier chacun et chacune d'entre vous. C'était vraiment extraordinaire. Je reste cependant avec un malaise. Le malaise de la manière dont plusieurs des conférenciers conférencières aujourd'hui ont parlé de la situation des jeunes de Laval. Je vais m'expliquer. Je suis personnellement d'accord avec vous tous que des accusations pour des jeunes de 13 à 15 ans, tout de même, sur la production et la distribution de matériel de pornographie juvénile est quelque chose d'assez non seulement surprenant, mais pas tout à fait adéquat par rapport aux gestes dont nous avons entendu parler dans les médias. Cependant, quand on transforme en épouvantail des peines de prison pour des jeunes de 13 à 15 ans, c'est comme si vous faisiez fi de comment est appliqué au Québec, quel est le modèle québécois de système de justice pénale pour adolescents. Et j'ai l'impression d'entendre des discours de l'Alberta, de d'autres provinces, mais ici nous nous sommes battus très fort contre le projet de loi C-10. À la fois les groupes communautaires main dans la main avec les centres jeunesse, les organismes de justice alternative qui sont nombreux, qui ne sont pas uniquement chez les autochtones au Nord, mais qui sont ici à Montréal et dans toutes les régions du Québec, pour que la réhabilitation des jeunes contrevenants soit au centre de nos interventions. Et les juges au Québec, aux chambres de la jeunesse ont dit qu'on n'appliquerait pas des peines aussi sévères et certainement pas des peines d'emprisonnement pour des cas comme celui-là. Je veux simplement dire que mon malaise est j'entends une ligne, c'est comme s'il y a une espèce de ligne, une frontière, on est dans defining the line, entre la justice alternative, qui est nécessairement toujours bonne, et on y croit chez nous à la justice alternative, et le système de justice pénale pour adolescents, qui, dans le cas de la cyberintimidation, sera nécessairement pas désigné pour ça. Alors, j'aimerais qu'on replace la victime au centre du processus aussi, et non pas les torts causés à la victime, mais la réparation que nous devons à la victime. La réparation est au centre du système de justice pénale pour adolescents au Québec. Donc, on n'a pas besoin de changer la loi. Et il faut l'appliquer différemment. Et ma question est la suivante, c'est la question à 4h30, et peut-être je m'adresse à Mme Sheriff en particulier, et aux gens de Defining the Line. Est-ce que la justice pénale pour adolescents a sa place dans les solutions à la cyberintimidation? Et si oui, comment devrait-elle être appliquée, pas seulement au Québec, on a encore des choses à apprendre, mais ailleurs au Canada? Merci beaucoup.
That's
a good question.
It's a long question.
No,
Do you want to translate? I can do it if you want.
Can you
translate? Yeah. Let me translate, or you go ahead.
I think the question is basically how, given that there's in the situation with the Laval students that I kind of alluded to, there's victims and there's like the perpetrators of these acts. So their center works with not only the perpetrators but also the victims to see how they can, what's going to happen with them, and to see whether or not, like, if the legal system in not only in Canada but in Quebec, which, you know, it's a federal law, so I view it to be, it should be working the same everywhere, because it's criminal justice. And so I think that based on that...
You didn't understand me. La loi sur le système de justice pénale pour adolescents s'appelle comment, en anglais?
The Youth Criminal Justice Act.
Yeah, so there's a model, a special model of application here in Quebec,
yeah,
where there is administrated by three parties. This is the prosecutor, the judicial actor, les centres jeunesse du Québec, like BACHA service, the protection service of child, and Justice Alternative Organization Group. It's a three-parted. Is there. So my question was, it's only the question, thus for the solution for cyber stacking or cyber bullying, is the penal system for young, justice system for young, is it part of the solution? Because I understand everybody.
Yes, that's, yeah, that's what
is
I was
it part of the solution
to.
Also? Because here, you will see the youngster in Laval won't go to prison. That's for sure.
But that's what I'm referring to. I'm referring to that system, but that the Youth Criminal Justice Act is federal, but it's applied differently in Quebec, and based on the cases that we have in Quebec, which I had listed in my slides. Obviously, the names are always blacked out, but the way that our system works is that we only focus. Judges' fundamental principle is to reintegrate and rehabilitate these youth back into society, and it takes precedence even over the sentencing, because part of the law, Section 38, states that the proportionality of the punishment must fit the crime. But the way it's interpreted in Quebec is that even if that's the case, the fundamental principle of rehabilitating and reintegrating these students, these 13-year-olds back in, should be based on that principle rather than just the proportionality of that crime. So I think that it's a long-winded debate, but I think that realistically, both the perpetrators and the victims are all in a situation where they all need help. And I think that's the situation that we're facing.
And if I may, I'll be very quick because I see we have one more question. I also think that it's very important. C'est OK si c'est en anglais? So I think that also, I agree with you. I think that oftentimes we're very quick to say, educate, legislate. And actually, absolutely, what we're seeing is through, you know, the reintegration and through the purpose of the Youth Criminal Justice Act, first and foremost, to be reintegration, it's not necessarily about criminalizing and putting them in prison, but it is really about educating and about deterring, right? I think that that's really important as well. And so absolutely there's a place for it. There is a place for, you know, the Youth Criminal Justice Act and how we apply it here in Quebec to be part of the solution. As long as that purpose stays first and foremost, and because we're proponents of that, we don't believe necessarily the Justice Act has it wrong, or that, you know, these kids shouldn't necessarily be tried or anything like that. All we're saying is that the way that we deal with it. So we're slapping a name on it, we're calling it child pornography, but how are we going to deal with it? And we absolutely agree with you. It's not jail time that's appropriate in this type of situation. It's a punishment that will allow these kids to reintegrate and to learn from the experience. And that is up to, and if judges are educated on how to deal with these things properly, then they can delve out appropriate
Community organization
yeah.
on restorative justice.
That they will be working yeah. with that those women
yeah.
will work together so, and or should work there's less of because of the philosophy right?
yeah.
or the education yeah. of the Youth Criminal Justice Act.
If you take a statistic, it's more than 90% of young offenders that don't go to
the
they're going to alternative justice organization,
yes.
to the so, and it's taking responsibility. And there's now a place after 100 years for victims in the justice system,
yes.
and particularly in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And victim has to take their places also,
yeah.
but
and
in the dialogue.
Say,
and
when
it's,
you say
yeah.
this one, you mean when you say this one?
Come back. The principle of the reparation, not court for the
remedies and
saying to the
restitution.
Yeah, and saying to the offender what did they live. This is at the center.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Are we
yes, absolutely. And I think you're right, and I think and I suspect that's what's going to happen.
I'm so sorry to interrupt, but for the interest of time, we do have that hands-on workshop at 3:45. We're not going to be able to take any more questions because it's 3:40 now, and several of our panelists are actually going to be leading that workshop. So I'd just like to invite Professor Sharif to come up and give some of her closing reflections and comments. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to officially close this part of the conference. I want to thank you for your questions, and the most interesting questions always come up at the end, and the last question is always the one that wants us to continue. So without further ado, I want to thank the panel. You were excellent. Thank you, and the organizations. Thank you for staying with us till the end. It's been a long day. Some people had to leave. They had told us beforehand. So it was a wonderful day. I hope that you all got something out of it. I hope everybody got something out of it. I want to thank Professor Bailey again for staying and for being here all day and supporting us and for her wonderful presentation. Thank you again. And keep up the good work. Work with us.